Welcome to the Thick Skin Podcast, where the most value comes from the most uncomfortable conversations. I'm your host, Espy, and today, yet again, I'm joined by the one, the only, Kayla.
Hello, everybody. Thank you for having me back.
I'm so happy to have you back. And of course, this time we're going to be inserting your Instagram later on in the episode, so stay tuned for that. At first, Kayla was a little bit hesitant, wanted to stay mysterious and anonymous to the first episode.
Fair warning to everybody out there, my Instagram is not all about sex, but I am definitely body positive again and support everybody. It's just there's a lot of K-pop content because I am a former K-pop DJ.
So let's just go ahead and get started. So the first episode regarding like plus size intimacy did so well. I didn't realize how freaky and kinky my followers were, but it wasn't my number one most viewed episode thus far, but it was definitely up there. And I know it was because I feel like the episode just added immense value to our listeners, and also it's just very educational. It helped them a lot, and we just kind of wanted to film a part two and cover something, some bases that maybe we didn't cover on the first episode.
No kink shame here. In fact, bring it on. Anything that makes you and your partner happy, as long as you are not hurting other people, is your business. And if you want to explore and enjoy, and really that's the best way to figure out what you like, because you really just don't know until you explore. You don't know what you don't know.
For sure. And that's like the excellent way to first start our first topic and theme of this episode. A lot of people had questions about, we talked about, I guess, quote unquote, vanilla or one-on-one relationships, and how to have or practice interpersonal communication in terms of like communicating what you like, what you don't like in bed. But how about if you wanted to take it a step further and start the conversation of like how to make things more spicy or more exciting, or wanted to explore like whether it's a fetish or a kink, or you just want to open up that conversation with your partner, especially being plus size, because maybe it could be a little bit tricky. But Kayla, how would you open up that conversation with a partner in terms of wanting to explore something a little bit more spicier?
Ooh, I think that's a difficult one, because you really need to have trust and understanding with your partner. And as we talked about, if you want to have a one-night stand, no problem, right? You're an adult. You are absolutely welcome to do whatever it is that you would like to do, as long as you're not hurting other people. But if you don't have a strong, solid foundation of trust, that's a difficult one to broach. Now, if you start by putting your spicy, maybe a couple of those emojis out there, then your partner might know, okay, this is there. You might put out that you're not quite vanilla, but not yet, you know, up there with the cayenne pepper. and it's an open conversation about like, what are some of your K-inks? What are some of the things that you've always wanted to try? I'm a big advocate of talking about fantasy, because in my mind, fantasy is the genre, but it also is that style of, but that's never going to come true. I'm never going to see a unicorn. I'm never going to ride a dragon. And so sometimes in your head, you can feel safe, right? You let that anxiety go because you're like, this is never going to happen. So I can daydream and I can really think about it. So when you ask your partner, what is your biggest fantasy? Mm-hmm. And you can precursor that by saying, hey, a fantasy is something you never thought would ever happen. So I am not going to think that you're going to go out and do this tomorrow. Mm-hmm. But what is something that you've kind of sat on, or maybe something that you've imagined, or what is something you've always been curious about that you thought, I don't really know? And it doesn't mean that you now have to go into a conversation of how do we do this. It might mean, let's go do our homework together. Let's bring up backdoor play. You know, never had the backdoor. Let's see. I've seen people that enjoy it. I've seen people that haven't enjoyed it.
What is backdoor play?
Backdoor play is when you're playing with anal and you're not having vaginal sex, but anal sex. Lots of men we have our gay bisexual men.
See, I've never heard of that term.
Lots
ever.
Of women who love it. It's backdoor. It's the backside. Okay. And so you're like,
it sounds pretty self-explanatory.
It's the back door. Okay. It's not the front door. It's the back door.
Alrighty. Okay. That makes sense.
But you think, okay, I've heard lots of mixed stories, or I've never really done that. Now, what's the best way? Of course, by yourself. Best way is for you to see if you like that. But maybe you're not in the mood when you're by yourself for that type of thing. Maybe you want that partner who wants to cherish you, who wants to tell you how beautiful you are, who wants to give you that praise kink. And it's like, oh man, your body is just so divine. And I love this jiggly bit here. And I love to just grab your thighs and like really praise you, that you start to feel more comfortable for them to do things that are considered taboo.
Things and everyone's different, right? Like maybe different. Some people don't exactly, not that they don't like praise, but maybe they're not used to it, or they want it to be like more, I guess, quiet.
There's quiet, or there's people who like it derogatory. There's people who really do like a degrading kink. They're out there for sure, you know, that they want to be called names and they want to go through it. Let's think about our different neurodiversity.
Okay.
When we think about ADHD, and sometimes that kills things in the bedroom because your brain goes off. Or maybe you have...
Which a lot of people suffer with.
A lot of people suffer. Or high anxiety, and you're like, well, what if I'm not doing it right? What if I don't look too good?
Overthinking.
Overthinking. And so maybe in that consent, no consent that we talked about in the last episode, if you didn't know about this,
you could
definitely
just tune in.
Listen to the last episode. But you have that consent, no consent. And you're like, hey, you know what? When I look like I'm kind of zoning off, maybe give a little slap. Maybe put your hand around my neck.
Wow.
Maybe put your hand in my throat. Something that's like, oh, a little bit of a shock factor. Or a physical, because ADHDers tend to like that physical. We have to have some type of stimuli. And so maybe you spank me. And so then, wow, okay, that's a sharp, quick pain, but there's a nice loud slap. And you're like, okay, that's brought me back to you and me.
Of course.
And I'm now not off in my head thinking about bunnies running through the
flowers. Yeah, and of course it's important to have like that prior conversation before this takes place.
And how hard, how difficult, how soft, where and what's appropriate, what's not. Again, to really be in a sexual relationship, you have to be adult enough to have the difficult conversations that make you blush, because if you don't, you're not ready. Mm-hmm. You're just really not ready. If you can't really be open, then how are you going to be able to accept when something goes not quite picture perfect?
Mm-hmm.
You got to think about, there's mess that goes with things. Everything's all fun and happy, and then everything's over. And then what do you do in that afterglow? Aftercare. And you're like, well, who's sitting in the wet spot? Who's going to clean up who? Does your partner, because it can't just be gentlemen. Sometimes we have women with women, non-binaries, right? We're male with male. We're not doing any kind of stereotyping here. Is your partner going to offer to clean you up, to go get the washcloth, to get the towel? Do you get the towel before? Do you both hop in the shower? Do you do it one at a time because you're too shy? You know, are you sensitive skin so you can't have baby wipes? I mean, there's so many things that are important to understand, that things get messy. Like, what if in the heat of the moment, you got your legs folded and you're face to face, and then they drip on you and that sweat hits you in your eyeball and you're like, oh my God, it stings. It stings. Like, stuff like that happens because we're human and because we have real bodies. You know, what happens when you had that burrito 2 days ago and you really didn't think anything of it? And now during an intimate position, there's some flatulence that happens. And it's like, are you going to be mortified, or is your partner just going to start laughing? And then you can laugh. And then you're both laughing at the fact that somebody farted.
Yeah, there's a lot of trust too that goes into it, and being mature, right?
Yes.
And that what kind of leads me to my next question. Like, we talked about, you know, having the uncomfortable conversation, being into agreement on things, or being open-minded. But let's say your partner of two or three years was wanting to spice things up and brings up maybe something, like you said, a fantasy that they mm-hmm. want to experience. But let's say you want to set a boundary and maybe you're not comfortable with it. You don't agree with it. Or you still love this person and you want to share that intimate moments with them. But you're kind of fearful of saying no because you don't want to lose that magic or that connection with them. But how exactly would you go about setting that boundary with someone in maybe not disagreeing, but just being like, I don't think I'm comfortable with that, at least not yet. You know, how okay. would you go about that?
So the first thing would be any type of no, any type of disagreement needs to be respected when you go into this conversation. You also have to learn that your partner sharing this fantasy is being vulnerable. Mm-hmm. And so the way that you shut that down or the way that you put a boundary is important. Just shutting it down is just, I would say, is inappropriate. But to say, you know what, mm-hmm. I need some time to think about this. Mm-hmm. Okay, I've heard you. And then repeat it. Definitely use our communication strategies of, this mm-hmm. is what you said and this is what I heard. Because maybe what you're hearing is also not exactly what they're saying. They like this kink and they want to get into this, and you're imagining something way more or way deeper or way harder or right. over the top. So reiterate what they said, and they could say, yes, that's what I said, and take some time to think about it. Because our knee-jerk reaction is what we were taught.
Mm-hmm.
And so let's keep it in the context, but let's use another example. You see this beautiful person walking down the street, but they're wearing very little clothing. The first thought that goes through your head is how you were raised. So the first you think is, oh my God, she's not wearing much, or wow, isn't his shorts a little too short? That's how you were raised. It's the way that you were brought up. It's the way that you were modeled how to think. When you stop and you go, but is that really my business? There's no genitalia hanging out. They're really nice looking. And even if they're not like nice looking, they don't pay my bills. They're not my romantic partner. They're not my best friend who I'm concerned about. Is that really my business? Huh. Maybe I should celebrate them wearing whatever the hell they want to wear. Because I wouldn't want somebody to tell me that I look mousy, that I look prude, that I don't look nice, because I wear button-ups all the way down to my ankles. So the first thought is how we were raised, but how we choose to talk to ourselves, how we choose to think is who we are and who we want to be. And so I think the same thing can absolutely apply with our kinks. When it comes off a knee-jerk reaction, it's like, oh my God, no way. Like, mm-hmm. no way.
Yeah.
But take that time to really sit on it and say, okay, I think that's really weird because I've not been exposed. I've not had that role play. I've not seen that role play in a positive way. It's just way too foreign for me, because diversity and exposure help us to learn, right? We don't know anything about the rest of the world. We've only ever seen our parents. And then we go to school and we have to learn lots of different colored kids in our school, lots of different languages, lots of different heights. And so think about that. Is this going to harm me? Is participating in this really uncomfortable, or is it unfamiliar? And then ask yourself, am I willing to try it to see what this is like? Or is this like an absolutely no hard pass? And then once you have that and you've really commiserated, you've really thought about it and you've gone over it in your head, then you can come back to your partner and you can say, okay, this is what I'm thinking. I hear that you said this. I see it this way, but I think it's because my background, my parents, the things I've seen, maybe the previous corn had too high expectations. And then you say, I'm willing to try this. Or I'm just really not, because I feel like I would have the ick, or I just could not get into it. How are you feeling about my response? And you really just have to go back and forth, because maybe they want to start with a panty fetish. Maybe they want to change lingerie. Maybe they want to do a gender bending and they want to change their traditional roles of gender if that's how they feel. And you have to tell yourself, is this really going to hurt me? is it really going to change the way I think or I feel? Or is having this experience just going to broaden my horizons? It's like testing new food, trying new countries' foods, new dishes, new things. You ask yourself when you put it in your mouth, you go, oh, yuck. Okay, but is it really yuck, or is it just because I'm not used to this texture, this flavor? And I think that's the best way to really approach a fantasy or spicing things up. If you can say, well, you know, I wanted to try some bondage here. And the first thing you're thinking of is like Shibari, like all tied up in the ceiling going, I'm not going to hang by my tits. And you're like, what? And maybe they're talking about just a blindfold and hands. Or maybe they're talking about just having one hand tied up. Or maybe we can start with something even smaller and work our way up. Let's do a trust thing where I tell you not to touch me. I don't actually tie you yet, but I tell you not to touch me. And we work towards where we're comfortable. And then there are a few that are just hard lines. And I think, like, personally for me, and this is, I'm going to go ahead and say, I'm sharing who I am on air. Personally for me, it's the things that could cause hygiene problems. Those are the types of things that I take a hard line on because I don't want to experience the potential of getting really sick because I didn't play properly. And it's the same as like the kinks that might see me end up pregnant or end up seeing me with an STD. No, I'm not really interested in that, taking those risks. So there are hard lines. And then there are the softer ones where you have to think, well, is wearing a maid's outfit really going to hurt me? Is seeing my male gender partner in female clothing really going to hurt me? Or is it just going to feel uncomfortable at first? Because most of us in a proper bond doesn't have to be necessarily a long-term relationship, even if you're friends with benefits, right? You're best friends and you get together sometimes. You're going to want to see your partner happy. And so their factor of wearing what they're going to wear that's different and how it lights up their faces or makes them more excited is going to feed into us. We like to see our partners happy. Otherwise, there'd be no such thing as oral sex, right? We wouldn't be doing that if we didn't know it caused them such tremendous pleasure. And that's a power trip. You're going to see that when you get into those kinks and those things, they're going to be like, wow, like this really helps them. And you know what that turns on? Turns me on. And so it becomes a cycle.
Yeah. And I'm sure that it's such a beautiful thing to experience too. But especially with maybe someone that is everything that's kind of brand new to them. I do want to say don't feel pressured or peer pressured maybe into doing things or exploring things that you're not quite ready for too. Because I'm the same where it's like just in general, if I just want to make the person that I like or am loving, like, happy, and I want to do everything in my power to do that. But also, I think there is such beauty in being uncomfortable, but at the same time, it's like, don't over-push yourself or overdo it. Just to make the other person happy, you just want to make sure that you're also happy and comfortable,
yes,
too.
There definitely has to be a give and take. And one of the things that we can say about being plus size, whether you're male or female, is we tend to overcompensate for all of the stress and anxiety that we have experienced. It is real PTSD growing up. People don't want to say so, but it really is. There's traumatic experiences that we have from whenever it is that we started noticing that we were overweight and then becoming obese. It's not just like a little tiny thing. Whether you have been fat your whole life or it didn't start until puberty, when it happens and you're made fun of and you're picked on and you have those things that happen or you get excluded or you go to a theme park and you can't ride the rides because they don't close properly, the bars don't come down, the latches don't work. When those things happen, you start to feel the anxiety and you start to have to deal with the stress. And it really does become post-traumatic stress. Like, you really have a lot to deal with. So we tend to, not 100%, right? Can't ever say 100%, but we tend to overcompensate as lovers. And we tend to be more giving because we want to show our worth. And we're not so good about taking. And we also have less boundaries than maybe is healthy. Now, I can't tell you what's healthy, because as long as you're feeling okay with yourself and you feel that your partner values you, then that should be healthy. But if you're doing all the giving, say if you're always giving oral sex and you're never receiving oral sex, are you really in a good relationship? Are you really in a proper way? Because it goes both ways. You have a kink, they have a kink. If you don't have a fantasy, then maybe think of one and decide to do your side. You know, it really needs to be communication both ways, not just one way. And so we need to be really cognizant of the fact that we do tend to overgive and overplease without accepting, because we're not used to compliments. We're not used to somebody trying to please us and to give us happiness. We were always expected to look out for others.
Yeah, and just like, I think it all kind of stems too with self-esteem and the way we feel about ourselves. Of course, if you're listening and you're not plus size or your partner's not plus size, it's very easy to become like almost like the yes man or the yes woman if, you know, you're the one always giving, like you said. And it's important to just kind of self-reflect and just handle your thoughts and ask yourself like, okay, I know I'm giving to this person and I'm making them happy, which makes me happy, but is there anything that, you know, I could, you know, communicate with my partner that would also make me happy?
I think one of the things that we struggle with is to really stop and look at the actions. We're very good at listening to words. Oh, but baby, this, and I love you so much, and I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that. Who shows up? Who actually shows up? Who comes to your door? Who plans the dates and who is there? Not just who pays for it. Who decides to say, you know what? Let's go out next week and I will pick a place. Who physically shows up for you is what's important, because there's a lot of instances, my friends, myself, my family, going through things like being my best friend, my sister, right? Listening to their stories. So many times things sound great until you stop and ask, so what have they actually done for you besides move their mouth? Where's the action to show that they mean what they say? And that's so hard because you're caught up in all of this. And another bit for our listeners out there, because a lot of this happens in the online world. What is your partner like around other people? It doesn't seem like a big deal, but it is. Who they are with you is one-on-one. We do that all the time. We mask with other people. Who we act with our parents and our grandparents is different with our friends at school. What does that new person you're talking to, that new partner, whether they're actually a partner or not, what is that new interest? How do they act when they're in a crowd, when they're around other people? When they're on a, even if it's online, when they're on a phone call, like a using a VoIP, we go to WhatsApp and we add three or four people to the conversation. What if we get into an online chat room and start talking? Do they still pay attention to you? Or do they then become the center of attention of the conversation? It's really important to see, because they can't mask themselves just to you in front of everybody else.
No, yeah. And funny enough, this is reminding me, I don't know if you've ever seen it, but the music video to Taylor Swift's All Too Well, it literally captures that scene perfectly that you just described. Is, of course, it's important to not only pay attention to your partner's character when you're one-on-one, but also just in public, the way they treat others, the way they treat strangers, the way they treat family, friends. Like, it's just a total reflection of them. So that is 1,000% valid. I'm very, very happy you brought it up.
It's crazy. It's crazy the amount of times that I've had even just a friendship that I thought was going really well, and I introduced them to friends in a three-way voice chat, or there's an app like WhatsApp where you are in a chat room with several people and it changes. Oftentimes leading into ghosting. All of a sudden this interest is gone and you're like, what happened here? It's a calling out. It's a calling out. So when you look at that, maybe consider, what would that bedroom interest be like if it wasn't just us in the bedroom? What does that look like if we were to actually go out and have dinner at a restaurant? Are they going to be nice to the server? And how does that look like? Because it doesn't seem like it's a big deal. What does that have to do with sex? What does that have to do with sex? It does, because in the back of your mind, you're going to recognize, is this person going to be treating people like a human being? Am I now going to feel safe and secure? Or am I going to think about how he yelled at the waitress, and maybe is he going to yell at me later? And while you don't feel it right there in the moment of hormones rising and the climax is coming, and the aftercare and everything is all done and those hormones have hit that bottom, it's going to be like, oh my God, what did I just do? And you don't want that regret.
Hear me out. What if there's an instance where it's almost all action and no words? Like the opposite, where it's like maybe there's like the planning of the dates or going out of their way to, you know, spend time together and making you feel special, but that emotional connection's not there. Like maybe when you need them emotionally, they're not there. Like having that bond, I guess, with them, when especially when like you need someone the most, but they're not necessarily being consistent or very communicative. We always hear like, this guy's like all words but no action. Like he's actually never there.
My mom need me to help.
And you're like, yeah. Okay, but your mom needs to help every time.
What if he's like all action, no words? Like, okay, we spend this time together and it's great. I'm not only talking about sexual, you know, sexual experiences, but just in general. It's like, okay.
Well, this is a difficult one. This is, comes back to our interpersonal communications, right? Mm-hmm. Looking at personality types, because
avoidant, anxious.
Right, or avoidant, anxious, because it's so easy to say, well, if you love me, you would just do for me, because that's, it happens a lot. We see it all over Instagram, all over our stories, giving us advice. But if you really cared, you would do it. If he cares about you, he'll just do it. Our anxious attachers are so scared that they're going to make the wrong move. They're so wrapped up in their heads about, but if I do this and it's not what she likes and I make her disappointed, I don't want to disappoint her. Our anxious attachers are like, I can't give myself because what if they leave? And then our anxious attachers end up having the best relationship and the other person treats them well and they're just like, I don't deserve this. And they're going to find out I'm a failure. They're going to find out that I am not good for them and they're way better than me. And what is it that they do? They get spooked. They create a plan in their head about what's going on. Either they're the worst person in the world or they put a trait on you. Well, she was too fat anyways, or she always was so needy. She just called me all the time. And like, she was always wondering, like, what am I eating? Like, take a picture of your food. Like, God, that's just, she's always in my face. She was trying to control me. Instead of the partner who's like, we're long distance. I just want to see what you have for dinner. Let me show you. Like, we're sharing our life. And like, I'm pretending I'm really there and I feel closer to you. The anxious attacher is going to be like, oh, she's just trying to control me. And then the strategy is for backing out. I'm going to stop calling. I'm going to start distancing myself. And when she's like, hey, what happened? You're not talking to me anymore. It's like, what? Like, I'm supposed to be tied to you at a hip? Like, it gets turned on its head. And then there's just like abrupt breakup. And it's just like crying and it hurts. And it hurts bad because you don't expect it. But why? It's an anxious attachment style. So it can't easily be described as he's all action and he's no talking, because that comes down to what is his style and where did he come from and how did his parents raise him? But the big but here is, if you're secure, and if you're not secure, but you're looking to become secure, you're working on yourself, right? How do we become secure if we're not? If we're anxious, if we're having that insecure attachment style, how do we become secure? Well, we pair up with somebody who is, or we do that shadow work. We do those hard questions on ourself, and we practice with ourself going, okay, this is my tendency. Let's try to change up the behavior. If they're all action and no talk, we don't know what kind of, you need to know what kind of attachment style they are. But at the end of the day, is that going to work for you? It's not going to work. Even if he's not wrong, there's nothing wrong with him or her. That's who they are. if you need more, then your needs and their needs don't match up. It's not a pointing fingers. He's wrong. No, she's wrong. No, they're wrong. It's if we are not going to both be happy and have our needs met, then it's not a good place for us to be. And it hurts so bad. Oh my gosh, it hurts. Oh, and the crying and the breakup songs, like every breakup song ever, you're like, oh my God, that makes more sense to me. Now play it again. And before you were like, ah, oh, bopping along and singing. And now you're like, oh my God, she knows me so well. It's time to break up. It's time not to waste your time. And let me tell you, there are so many women, and I'm sorry, guys, I know what happens to men as well. I am not discrediting you. It absolutely happens. But the majority, the percentage, the majority happens to women where we waste our lives waiting on somebody who's not ready to commit to us because they might never do so. They might be waiting for the next best thing, or it's just not perfect. And we waste a lot of our youth and our years when we know that we have to worry about childbearing age. We have to worry about when we decide to start a family versus men have a much longer window.
At the end of the day, it doesn't matter like how perfect you are for someone or maybe how perfect you feel or it seems like they are for you. At the end of the day, if that person is like emotionally unavailable or you yourself are emotionally unavailable, it just won't work out.
Yes.
I think that's what I meant by like the, it's this, it just seems like all action, no words, because okay, maybe we're working or wanting to make something, you know, match or work out, but both of us or yourself or that person is just not there, then it's just needs more time.
And I think that's where that saying is very accurate. If he wants to, he would. Anxious people want to, but they don't. But if they really did, they would then do that work and go through those tough times, just like the insecure attached. Mm-hmm. You know, there's the anxious attachment and then there's hyper, right? There's the avoidance. Sorry, I said anxious earlier. Let me take this back. I was talking about the avoidant style, not the anxious style, the avoidant person. Those were the traits. The anxious person wants to hold on when it's not right, wants to keep going and hold on to it and hold on to it when it's not right for them because we're so scared of being left. We're so scared of not having. And so it's both sides are very valid.
No, yes.
They're both valid.
It's so tough when you're both.
That is true.
And I'm both. Everyone that's listening, I'm like a mix of anxious and avoidant.
Like, so it's true. There's called a complicated anxious attachment.
Yes.
Which has that avoidance in it. It even has a little bit of that insecure.
Terrible.
It's terrible. And it usually comes with a lot of childhood trauma. A lot of things that happen very early on. And it's not picking one specific parent or the other, but early trauma that does that. And so you have both sides like, I want you, but I go away. But I want you, but go away.
Getting your heart broken at a very, very young age and it not necessarily have anything to do with a romantic relationship.
No, just
in general.
It's the security.
Yeah,
getting broken.
Feeling unsafe.
Yes.
Like
that security getting broken. And what does this have to do with sex? Everything. Everything. Mm-hmm. Because if you're not comfortable, how are you going to relax into that orgasm? You can't. Mm-hmm. And guys, you're like, well, stroke it long enough, it'll go. Yeah, but how close were you? Like, how good did that feel? And there's so many guys out there that'll tell you, and because it's not universal, right? We're all different. Enough is enough. I had so many of my dude friends, like growing up in high school, lots and lots of guy friends, not very many girlfriends. And they were just like, it all feels the same. It all feels the same. One off with you versus one off with you later versus one off with her, one off with my ex-girlfriend. Mm-hmm. Like it all felt the same.
Wow.
But when I got older and got into a romantic relationships, like a real proper, I love you to my core, like I don't ever want to lose you. Not just a teenage love, oh, I love you, but like I don't ever want to be without you. And then that intimacy is there. It's mind-blowing. And even for them, they're like, wow, that was so good because that connection made a difference. And so guys who are like, yeah, well, I've never had that. Then consider, have you ever really been attached to the girl that you're with or the guy that you're with? If you've never had that, have you really been attached heart to heart? Or were you just like, yeah, I like them, they're cool. But like, have you thought there's no way I could go a day without this person in my life.
How to detach.
It's totally different. But you also think about, so now we've come full circle of their little kinks. Mm-hmm. If you're long distance, how do you keep that spark alive, right? Some people do things on video. Some people, like myself, who say, no, I don't want anything on the internet that's going to come back and bite me in the butt, because anything can be recorded, right?
Mm-hmm.
Your guy over there is like, no way. You're like, I'm not letting you share me with all of your friends.
Never.
Never, right?
For me, never.
No. So there's a hard line there for me. And that's just like, I won't. In person, we can be together, but I don't want to videotape it. I don't want to take photos. I don't want the evidence there.
No, I'd have to put his phone in like a lock or something, I swear.
But a lot of people do, and they're okay with that, and they're comfortable with that. And that really helps them keep their relationship alive. Mm-hmm. And having that mutual masturbation on video or even a telephone, when you talk about these experiences, it does heighten the sexual pleasure when you're bonded. And it kind of seems like, what? No, it does. You can use your corn, right? Your little videos. You can masturbate with yourself. But when you have somebody even listening on the phone, let's say no videos involved, just listening to each other, talking sweetly, talking dirty, talking about things you want to do when you get together.
Yeah.
It makes a difference, especially yes. for women. That mental connection has to happen. I mentioned that in our last podcast. It's that connection that needs to happen. Now, does it have to be love? No. Could I be with a random stranger and be picturing like Jackson Wang? Absolutely. But that's in my head, and that's mental, and then I get where I need to go because I've got my mental image. Men have their spank bank. They have their mental images, right? If it's not there, then it's not there. If your brain is not involved. But for women, when you're bonded even closer, you have security. And in security, you can let go. And when you can finally let go and relax, then the cortisols or the corticosteroids, all the things in your brain like start to drop and let you just really feel. Well, why? Because now the feel-good hormone, your oxytocin, can come in and replace in those receptors.
Did you hear or read that? I saw this on the internet that when you're with someone that you really connect with or like or even love, you get really sleepy.
That's the oxytocin.
Yeah, it's like you're both together and it's just like you're kind of drowsy. And
that's the oxytocin.
That's so cute. I love that.
It's the oxytocin. So that's your bonding hormone and your feel good. So you feel good. And what it does is it bonds you. So here's another tip for my maybe not first timers. First timers for sure. But I'm gonna let you know, if you are not sure if you should have sex with a person, you like them, you're like, maybe this is it. I don't know. Are we ready? Well, maybe tonight's the night. If you are not sure that you really like them and you want them in your life, if you have red flags, hesitation, and you're like, I just don't know if I want to be with this guy for a long time. I don't know if this is just dating or now we're like serious dating. Don't do it.
Mm-hmm. If you're questioning, don't.
Don't. And why? Because that oxytocin hits and it actually bonds you. And then you have a false sense of being bonded and being together and loving that person when you would not have before, because your brain has switched that hormone on and attached you to the person. Oxytocin is the brain chemical that comes down when you have a letdown and you milk and you're feeding your baby, so that you bond to that child, so that you feel beholden to take care of them, to look after them, and to want to absolutely like just make sure the world is right for this person. As a baby, it happens after sex. That pillow talk, that aftercare is really important. So if you don't know that you are 100%, don't do it. Because you will bond yourself to them and then think everything's good. And then like weeks later, when all of this romance stuff has come down and you're off your honeymoon high, you're going to go, what the, oh my, oh, why? Why did I, he's not even that good in bed.
Have you by any chance heard that sound? It's like, When you know, that song. It's like all over TikTok right now. When you know everyone. That's when you do it.
Okay, so then the good advice is, if you're new and you're dating and you're like, I'm not sure, this is like the second or third date, but like, we're really, really hungry. And you want sex. Then okay, then you want sex. You both really want it. But if you're like, I don't know, I don't want to feel like I'm the easy girl. I don't want to feel like I'm like she has sex on the second date. That shouldn't cloud your judgment. You do what you do and it feels good. If you want to, then great. But if you're saying, I don't know if I'm ready to be naked in front of this person. I don't know that I'm ready to have the lights on and fully expose the genitalia here and like show you my yoni and look at your staff. If you're not there, then don't do it. Because that's where those feelings of bonding come in and you're not there yet. But what can you do? Okay, well, like, Kayla, then what do we do? Because, like, we're horny, but I'm not quite there yet. Go home and have fun with yourself. Because you still should be able to feel that. You still need the hormonal release because it's healthy for your heart. It's healthy for your blood system. It's actually really good for you. But do it with yourself so you have self-bonding time and think about things. You can think about that person if you want to think about him, but that breeds, what does it breed? It breeds fantasies of a person that they're not. They weren't there. You're having a fantasy, and in that fantasy, you've crafted a world. And then when you break up, that world is crashed, and it hurts even worse because you pretended that it could have been so much more instead of recognizing what actions did he actually take? When was he physically here versus me pretending, yeah, but in like a couple of months' time, we're going to go here and have this vacation and he'll do this and this and that. No, let's look at what actually has happened.
With everyone, sometimes we have this thing, especially like if, let's say, you're in like an instance of a crushing stage, like you build up this idea of this person. Graduation. And it's like, yeah. Do you really actually like this person for who he is or who she is? Or do you just like the idea of this person that you kind of build up in your head? And these fantasies are like you daydream or like you think about them before you go to sleep or like what could be. Maybe you're just kind of crushing on like the idea of what could be too rather than who he or she actually is.
That is so true. I wish I would have learned this so many years ago. I wish I would have known then what I know now. And that's like, that's a common saying because we all kind of grow, but I've teased through the 20s. I had to like get my heart broken. I had to have those one night stands that turned into like, yuck, let me hide and crying because they never did call me back. Or, you know, the instance of I wouldn't have had as many partners as I did if the person that I was with would have stayed with me. Because there's a stigma, right, that girls can't have as many partners as guys can. There's a stigma that you should wait for so long and you should hold off and then you have sex and then they leave you and it's somehow your fault. It's never your fault. They were always going to do so or they have these attachment styles that don't work. If you're not ready, then don't do it. Because you're exactly right, SB. Absolutely. The fantasy that you build in your head is what you're longing for. And that's what you're mourning when you cry and you grieve. You're actually mourning not so much the relationship as what you thought you were going to have in the future. And that is when you start to heal. You mourning a future that you put time and effort and energy imagining. So if you can help yourself from not doing those imaginations, then it really helps. We do it with our idols. We do it with our favorite pop stars, right? With our favorite actors. But that, going back to the beginning of our podcast today, is a fantasy. You know 100% you are never going to meet Justin Bieber on the street. You are never going to actually be in person with Halsey or Ariana. And so you can have those little fantasies, right? And we do. We have those types of one-way communications. And we get taught about that in our communication classes, right? We have that one-way perception where they send out their image. They don't know you, but they love their fans, but I love you, is said to a microphone or a television to like millions of people. They don't know your face. So be careful who you give your energy to. And I know it sounds like a guru. It sounds like a Reiki.
Or you do meet the person, but it just didn't like meet your expectations at the end of the day.
You fantasized harder what it was going to be about, yes, than what actually happened. So be careful who you give your energy to. It's a hard thing to do. And I know, especially for our youngsters out there, like our teenagers, our late teenagers, our really, really early 20s, because there's so much we have hope for. And there's so many things that you have these like dreams about. And dreams are fantastic. They help move us. They motivate us. But be careful where you put your energy. Put your energy into something you can obtain on your own. A partner is wonderful, and we want to imagine being with them. But that little boy that you dreamed about having, that beautiful little boy, might be a girl. And you're disappointed because when you finally have kids, you don't have any boys. And you've done it to yourself versus saying, this genderless child, which you still may not have, what are things that I can actually think about that I can achieve? I can achieve an education. I can achieve a goal of doing good things in the world, of volunteering my time or putting an effort into a craft that I love. I love crocheting or knitting. I'm going to put my effort into trying to dream the biggest project I've ever made. And it might take me 10 years to get there because right now my stitches aren't even straight. Right? That otherwise we'd never have TV. There would be, if the writers didn't have things they could fantasize about, there would be no American television. All those sitcoms wouldn't happen.
There would be no corn.
No corn. Oh my gosh, because how real, right? Mm-hmm. Body images, not real.
Yeah.
9-inch, not real.
And it's also scary.
Coming on command, not real.
It's also risky.
Risky.
And it's all a lot to learn. I still have a lot to work on too. And I have made some mistakes and I have made very hard decisions. But with experience, of course, and as we're going and we're navigating life, even the bad experiences, you just have to like kind of look back at the situation and kind of like be thankful or grateful because we
learned. They make you who you are. They make you who you are. And you're like, if I hadn't broken that glass now, I wouldn't be as careful about putting things on the edge of the counter.
Yeah.
If I hadn't broken my favorite thing, I would know not to do it. And it's hard. But can we talk about corn for a second?
Yeah.
Can we talk about that? I'm going to let our listeners know. There is good corn and there's bad corn. But let's talk about the actual like academic side. And like psychologically what this does.
Yes.
Psychologically, corn is really damaging. And we're like, wait, what? Mm-hmm. Because there are other people's bodies. There are unrealistic expectations of what you should look like, how long it should take, what things are. Even the messy side of things, they don't show the aftercare and the really, the cleanup. Like, you know, the guy blows this huge, he's got lots of milk. Nobody knows that it took him 3 days of eating protein and doing nothing. He's not even allowed to touch it for 3 days for him to have such a massive load. Or he's this one in like a million and he's been casted. You guys, these are actors. They are casted. They are found for what they're willing to do and how much abuse their bodies are having. Now, do they love what they do? A lot of them do, yes. And am I shaming sex work? Absolutely not. I lived in Australia. We're in a house under a proper, you know, guidance, and you got your medical clearances from both the workers and your clients. Yes, everybody consents. I am not shaming sex work. But watching the corn and then expecting your life to look like that, not healthy. Also, from a past experience, from a past very serious relationship, we'll say that, a very long-term serious relationship I had, my partner viewed corn a lot and it became an addiction. So much so that it was corn before work and corn right before bed. And then I got ignored and there was no intimacy with me. And then there was erectile dysfunction. There was premature ejaculation. There was PE. They were so used to masturbating themselves with corn that when it came time to actually having intimacy, they prematurely went because they were used to it. And the doctor said, this is one of the dangers of the corn. You do it all the time and you kind of do your thing to get as fast as you can. When you are actually intimate, you can't hold back. You have problems with erectile dysfunction because it's not stimulating enough. And that's how corn starts. One thing, and then it's got to get more and more and more and more to stimulate because you lack a bond that you have with a partner. The validation a partner gives you into you are enough. Making you happy, making your partner happy makes you happy. So watching somebody on the television, you're not doing it.
We hear about too, like the number one, like porn or corn stars in the world, and how they ask people, or they're asked like, do you regret any of it, all the work that you did, or being on camera, being so intimate? And they say, like, yeah, they do regret it, because whether it's the effects that it had on their mental health, or they know the effects that they had on others, and how much, how common addiction is, and how harmful it could be, they just regret it.
Well, and a lot of times, not all the times, but a lot of times they struggle to have a positive relationship, because their partners tend to be jealous, or they have to be in the industry. And then the physical intimacy act that is society puts such a heavy weight on doesn't hold as much for them. And they have to do other types of bonding and intimacy. And it can be done. And lots of them are very successful. It can be done. But the majority don't know how. And it's because a lot of our actors that we see come from backgrounds that are not a secure attachment.
Right. And you also hear how they come from very bad backgrounds, or it is something that's, you know, I'm not going to say should be avoided, but just be very mindful and careful of when exploring.
For sure. And there are good reasons for it. There are good ways to consume it if you do so with a good mindset. We learn in our communications the classes that we have to look at media literacy. Who's saying this, and who's writing that article, and what do they mean? Is it slated? You know, where are the true facts? And you can look at corn that way. You know, this is amateur corn. Who produced it? Where are the actors coming from? Are they transparent about this? And a lot of the newer houses that are female-owned and female-directed are like, these are our couples. They've been together this many years. They agreed to be on camera. They're a bit of an exhibitionist. There is no director. There is another female who is filming. Right? You can find those reputable sites. But if you sit down and you watch it with your partner and then talk about the things they did and then talk about how my body doesn't look like that, I'm worried you don't think of me this way, or I don't go off so quickly. It takes me a lot longer than that person. Or they can go for an hour and I'm like 15 minutes. Having that real conversation, again, communication at that kind of nitty-gritty level where it's embarrassing, or it might be frustrating, but it's very real. And then it can be done. If you're like, well, I don't know what anal sex looks like. I don't know how, like, we can do that. I know you got to go slow. I know it takes stages. You can't just like, how we look that up. And so maybe it is, but you're not going to go to like the mainstream gay porn house to see how to get the backdoor play. You're going to want to go to somebody who's reputable, that shows you partnerships, that shows you, okay, this is how I'm going to teach you guys. And then you try it as a partnership. Because there's good stuff and there's bad stuff. It's just, as we mentioned earlier, the majority of it is not in a healthy way.
Mm-hmm. And it's all fantasy.
Fantasy.
Going back to fantasy.
Fantasy.
Opening with fantasy and then closing with fantasy.
Fantasy.
So, dreams.
I would like to encourage our listeners to send in questions and to ask. I cannot tell you I've got all of these degrees, but I can say that I have experience. I have a lot of friends that have had experience. I have actually traveled the world. I have so many different types of friends. I have friends that work in the brothels in Australia. I've had friends that are corn stars here in LA. Well, not here, but in California and LA. I can say that I've met so many different people in my life. And then I do hold a master's, right? I am degreed from a university.
Yes.
And I understand human communication, and I am going to be taking a class on sex ed so that I can be a sex education teacher officially, because you get certified. But send in your questions. I came on this podcast as a plus size person with experience in the sexual world, and to be able to say these are the problems I've seen, these are the problems I've heard from my friends, from other people. And so I'm not claiming to be an expert, but I definitely have had experience to give advice for. We do want to apologize, first of all, though, because we tried to gather your questions and Instagram was being a bit of a poo head. And feel free to contact me. My Instagram is at Kayla24. That is K-H-A-E-L-A-2-4. That is at K-H-A-E-L-A-2-4.
Perfect. Thank you so much, Kayla, again for joining us. And again, my Instagram is at 11ESPY, so it's 11ESPY. Go ahead and send us some messages, ask us more questions. And again, we will, of course, have Kayla back very soon. And thank you so much.
Thank you, everybody.
Bye. See you next time.